I can usually tell how people's meditation is by how much they smile. If you have good meditation, your mind is so light, so peaceful. It's a natural smile. There's a beautiful energy of the mind. So, if you'd like to get yourself comfortable, in a few moments we're starting this evening's Dhamma talk. I haven't changed my ways over the last 3 months. Whenever I give a talk these days, I don't plan what I'm going to say. Well, your mind is very peaceful and still, it's got lots of energy. It's a huge gold mine of insight and understanding. But you don't need to learn from books. You just need to make the mind still and allow it to flow out. So just before I came in here, one of the people said, "Ajahn Brahm, have you got a topic for your talk tonight?" I said, "No, not really." He said, "Can you talk about greed?" Okay. So talk about greed. That's what I'm going to start talking about. Let's see, I don't know what I'm going to finish up talking about. And this is by far the best way to give a talk. It's by far the best way to live life. By living life, we don't plan what's going to happen. We just get into life. And we respond without any plans, without making any decisions long time beforehand. Because then, if we plan too much, we're not responding to all this wonderful information which is coming in every moment. We become someone who acts with spontaneity. And in that spontaneity is a huge amount of resources which you can draw on. So talking about greed, then greed is the opposite of what I've just been talking about. Greed is not allowing spontaneity and freedom where you carry few burdens of thoughts and plans. In greed we try and accumulate and own so much stuff, both mental and physical. It just causes our mind to get so heavy. It causes our body to be burdened. We have too many things, and so we tend to struggle through our life. Sometimes, I've been a monk for over 31 years now, and sometimes that I look upon my life, and it's the opposite of greed. When people ask me how much I have, which sometimes they do, I'm in good health, but nevertheless, just because out of habit more than anything else, every 6 months I receive a form from the Centrelink for my healthcare card, because I'm a low-income person. And I dutifully fill it in on every line with a big zero. How much does the Buddhist Society of West Australia pay you? Nothing. How much do you earn from shares? Nothing. From rental? Nothing. From other sources of income? Nothing. How many savings have you got? Nothing. And then at the end you have to put the total of your income. It's a very easy sum. Nothing. Remember that I think it's passable now because the local branch of Centrelink knows who we are. And so let's hear the monks again. Because the first time we did this, we got a letter back. So they, what's going on? How do you guys support yourself? But the point is that I enjoy that. Because I enjoy being someone who's making a statement of not owning things. Even though this is supposed to be our retreat time. A couple of weeks ago I went to Singapore for, they wanted me to participate in a concert about opening the door of your heart, about that book which I wrote. It was very brilliantly done. But we made an arrangement, because it was the time when I shouldn't be travelling, just to go overnight, to leave Saturday morning and come back Sunday afternoon. So I really, one of the most enjoyable parts of that trip was going through the customs on my way back. My baggage was this, and it was much emptier than this. So they asked, "Where's your luggage?" And I held up my bag. No checking baggage, no checking baggage. Even the cabin baggage was hardly anything. And it's so wonderful being able to travel overseas just with this little bag. When I see all these other people with suitcases and backpacks and carrier bags, my goodness, what some people got in the duty free is more than I carried for the whole time. And it just reminded me just how wonderful it is not to be greedy and just have a few things. And so part of my life as a monk is just seeing how many things I can get rid of. Because you know what it's like? The less you have, the more people want to give you. So when people give me something, I try and give it to somebody else. It's amazing some of the things they've given me. You know, even some people give me a comb. I don't know what they meant by that. But nevertheless. So as a monk, whenever anyone gives you something, you accept it. Within reason, that is. And then you always pass it on to someone who needs it more than you. This is an opposite of greed. So when we're talking about greed, it doesn't mean that you live like me in poverty. What it really means, if you having no greed, is what comes to you in life through your hard work. You know, for your job, maybe, you know, maybe have good karma to inherit a fortune from your parents. I don't know where your money comes from, or you win the lotto, who cares? But what the opposite of greed is, when it comes in, you pass it on. You don't accumulate and keep things. Because the possessions of this world are there to be enjoyed and passed on, not to be kept time after time after time, moment after moment, year after year. Because there's no point to that. I was commenting that I saw some photographs of people's houses 20, 30 years ago. Look at those houses 60 years ago, 100 years ago. 100 years ago, they were much, much smaller. Even your house, the average house in Perth, if we could transport it in time 60 years back, would be the mansion of a very rich person. And that's your house now. And you're just an average person. And the amount of stuff they had in their rooms was very small. Not the amount of junk which we have in our houses. Every room is like a junkyard. But this is all stuff which is really important to us. And you know what it's like when you have so much stuff? Many years ago, during the rains retreat, which we're just almost finishing, or other times of the year, there's always people come to visit our monastery, and we love taking them around and showing them how we live, because it's not just giving talks which actually shows what the Dharma, what this Buddhism is all about, it's how we live. That's probably the best talk we can ever give, just our lifestyles. And so we were showing this group, I think it was, say, I was like a women's housewife group of an afternoon. They would meet once every week, and they'd just go and do things together. And so one of them had the idea, let's go and visit the Buddhist monastery. So they came to our monastery, and I talked to them and showed them around. I always remember their reaction when I showed them my hut, where I stayed. I opened the door and said, this is my house. A woman and a woman, they put their head around the door and they looked at the room where I stayed, where I live. And they said, wow, if only my house was so small and so simple, I'd get all my housework done in 15 minutes. And most of us, how long does it take you to do your housework? All the cleaning and the scrubbing and the washing and the rearranging. So sometimes, what are you doing that for? It's not that you can't enjoy things, but what I'm saying is the less greedy you are, the less things you have, the less things you own, the more you enjoy. So I can see, because of my lifestyle I've lived like this, it's such a privilege, such a wonderful opportunity to have few things. When they come to me, I always pass them on. It was one of the most inspiring occasions of my life. And it's actually, I'm glad this story has come up, because somebody else, it was an email or something, I only read it very quickly because I was in a rush before I came in here, so I didn't understand exactly what it was saying. But somebody sent an email. They also wanted to talk about what's the nature of an enlightened person? What can they do, what they can't do? And the story which has just come to mind was an inspiring occasion when, for the first time, when I was a monk in Thailand, my teacher, Ajahn Chah, asked me to go into his room to fetch something for him. Usually he wouldn't allow anybody into his room. So as soon as he told me to go and get something, I thought, wow, great. Now I can see how he really lives. To see the inside story. These monks, have they got computer games in their rooms? Have they got TVs? Have they got nice four-poster beds where they're sleeping at night? How do they live? And this was not an ordinary monk. This monk, who was my teacher, was one of the great monks in Thailand. He's now passed away. He's one of the great monks of maybe last century. And I saw how he lived. He gave inspiring talks. He was very, very wise, even though he only had a basic education. But now I was seeing not actually how he taught, but how he lived. And when I went into that room, I can still picture it now. It was just so inspiring, because there was nothing there. A mat, a grass mat was all he used to sleep on. A wooden pillow, and one robe on the line. And nothing else. No desk, no pot plants, nothing on the wall, not even a Buddha statue or a shrine in there. People like that don't need anything to remind them. Their life is their reminder. That was their Buddha statue. That was their shrine. And I saw how an enlightened person really lives. And it wasn't as if at that time my teacher Ajahn Chah couldn't get things. By that time, when I was invited up to his hut to have a look inside his room, he had prime ministers, generals, very wealthy business people, millionaires coming and offering him all sorts of stuff. And he received it and gave it to somebody else. That is what we mean by the opposite of greed. Someone gives you something, you earn it, it's your karma, you enjoy it, and then you pass it on. What a beautiful way of enjoying and using the material gifts of nature. If you have a lot, receive it and pass it on. This afternoon, I came into Perth earlier because it's actually, for those of you who know, it's John Curtin Day today. The anniversary of the time, I think, that he passed away. He no, it wasn't his death day, it was July. I think when he was elected Prime Minister of Australia, just before the Second World War. The reason I went there was because about a year ago they gave me a medal for the community service and the vision and leadership. And so today, some more people were given medals. And I thought, well, if I expect people to come to my ceremony when I get a medal, it's only fair to go to other people's ceremonies. And that's what I thought I went there for, just for a sense of duty. But when I went there, I was really inspired. I was inspired because in this little ceremony, they were acknowledging people who use the resources of their lives, not for themselves, but for helping others. One lady who started with a home for people living on the street. Now she runs 65 homes for homeless people. Another person, he's actually in Charlie Gardner's, who fought tooth and nail to get alternative therapies for cancer sufferers. So if any of you have cancer and get treated at Charlie Gardner's, then there's a place there where you can get alternative therapies, whether it's meditation or Reiki or whatever, started by this doctor who had to move almost heaven and earth to get this place established. Helping people, putting himself or his reputation as a hard-nosed doctor on the line, thinking that let's do some massaging of somebody's feet and that might ease their symptoms. People like that inspire me. The stuff which they have, whether it's their material possessions or whether it's their talents, their strengths, they receive them and they pass them on, keeping nothing for themselves. You see that those two people who received the medals today, they're just so humble, wondering why they ever were given those things. Why did they receive a medal? They weren't doing this for themselves. Such people, what we call like selfless. The sorts of things which religions and spirituality are supposed to have been celebrating for centuries. The sorts of things which we need as examples to inspire us and to move us and to understand what the opposite of greed is. This selfless service, this giving, this just wanting to help, wanting to serve. In Buddhism we call it dana. And by dana, I know that every now and again people say, can you come to my house for a dana? That's not the way to give dana. Dana, giving, is giving your life. Giving your things, everything, for others. About 6 months ago, when I was in Singapore, I went to a meditation center. They took me around. And afterwards, at the end, they said, if you'd like to sign the visitor's book. Now, I say this because many monks actually have and carry money. The monks here in Perth follow a very strict code of discipline. We don't have any money at all. So maybe this was a reason, and maybe the people didn't realize I was one of these very strict monks who don't handle, keep, or have any money. Because the book actually wasn't the visitor's book, it was the donation book. And they gave it to me, I think probably expecting a donation. And I put my name, signed it, and only then did I see, how much are you giving? And so I was in a very sticky situation. I already started writing something in there, so I had to think very quickly, how much am I giving? And I wrote the six words, M-Y-L-I-F-E, I give my life. And I love that, what I wrote there. Because that's actually what I did do, and what I keep on doing. I give my life to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, to Bodhinyana Monastery. I give my life to anybody who comes here and asks for my time. That's the opposite of greed. It's this beautiful giving. Not just 99%, but 100% giving. And that is inspiring. Is giving, expecting nothing back in return. The selfless giving. When you understand the selfless giving, the opposite of greed, it means that you don't own the act, you don't own the results. When we talk about greed, what it really means is this ownership. It's my good karma. It's my Buddhist Society of West Australia. It's my money. It's my house. It's my family. It's my car. All this my business is the big problem of this world. It's not my Buddhist Society. It's our Buddhist Society. It's not my monastery. It's our Buddhist monastery. It's not even my city of Perth. It's our city. It's not even my body. Even this thing here is our body. You feed it, I exercise it. That's all it is. So it doesn't really belong to me. It really doesn't. I've got no control over it. So when you understand it's not mine, it's not ours, you don't get greedy or worried about it. But it's not just letting go of your body that way. It's our body. It means when it gets old, when it gets sick, when it's about to die, I don't get upset about it. It's not mine. It never started with my body. It belonged to my mum when I first found it. I just borrowed it and she gave it to me. Thanks, Mum. And I've been looking after it for all these years. You start when your fetus part of your mother's body. So who owns this anyway? So anyhow, just when there's no ownership, there's no greed, you're not really concerned about your body. Unfortunately, that when we moved away from villages and from extended families, we've got this individuality where we think of ourselves rather than the group, rather than the family, rather than the village, and that individuality makes us very lonely and also very materialistic and possessive. It's mine. Keep away. That is called greed. And you can see the stupidity of that. We all know there's enough food to feed everybody in this world. There's enough water to go around. But some people are thirsty while the golf courses are so green. So there are some people who are so hungry while there's a lot of food is just tipped into the waste dumps. Why? It's just greed stops us from sharing. Greed stops us from caring. When we think it's ours, I also think it's rather mine rather than it's ours. When it's ours, we share. When we share, there's always enough to go around. So here we understand just it's not in anybody's interest to be selfish, to be an owner, to think it's mine, my house, it's always ours. We bottle the water now and sell it. Soon we'll be bottling the air and selling that. It only needs somebody to get the franchise and then taxing you for breathing. Right? It's terrible just the way that we have ownership of these things. So instead of ownership, which is greed, we have the opposite, which is letting go, which is giving, which is sharing, which is ours. Which is the same when you have relationships. Don't be greedy and wanting everything from your partner. Also, don't be sacrificing and just wanting to give and not really thinking about yourself. In relationships, it's always not mine, not hers, not his, ours. Just coming together, seeing the bigger picture, not being greedy, but sharing. And when we can share like that, when we think it's not me, not him, not her, but us, then we understand how a relationship can grow and prosper. If there's anybody in this Buddhist society trying to sort of be on a committee or being part of this or part of that, and just for the sake of their ego trying to get somewhere, they're just going to miss the boat. It's always working together and us, that's where we have our strength. Working with things. Not trying to fight them. And in the same way that we're not greedy for things, even in our spiritual practice, even in our meditation. We don't fight things in our meditation. We work with them. We share our energies with everything, rather than taking from this and giving them to that. It's most important to understand that when you sat meditation before we started this talk, it's no different than the meaning behind these words. Meditation is not something different from the Dharma talks. Not something different from the life of being a Buddhist or being a calm, peaceful person. It's the same methods work in both the active life and the passive life. Because we're soon to finish our retreat period in our monasteries, one of the monks asked me this morning, when the retreat's over, how should I practice? What do you mean, how should you practice? Do exactly what you're doing now. Being selfless. Something needs to be done, give it everything you've got. Don't think about controlling. If you have to do a job in the monastery, such as, you know, painting a wall or moving some sand, what a wonderful opportunity that is to give. Don't think of what you're getting from this monastery. Thinking of what you can give, how you can share, how you can participate. So if you know that, you know how to meditate. One of the monks during the retreat was getting a bit restless. His meditation wasn't going so well. So I taught him about giving. The meditation on giving. You know what that is? You give your bottom to your meditation cushion or your seat. And you don't expect anything back in return. Understand? Well, isn't it the case that people start to sit on a cushion or a chair and they want something out of this? I want to be peaceful, and I want to become enlightened, I want some great insight, I want to be able to fly in the air. Apparently one of the kids came to the monastery and said he thought that we all had psychic powers and he wanted to know the room where we practice our flying. Because he knew we can't actually exhibit this. He was smart enough, maybe his father told him, that the monks and the nuns, they can't actually show off their psychic powers. So he said, I know you've got them. You must actually practice them in private somewhere, in some secret compartment in our monastery. Can you please show me? Kids have got great imaginations. But no, it's when we sort of meditate. We meditate not wanting anything. And this is most important, because even the meditation is an experiment on what happens when you don't have any greed. Okay, in the world, you've got to go to work, you've got to pay the bills, you know, you've got to sort of meet people's requirements, you can't drive your old car, otherwise you get a yellow sticker from the police. So sometimes you have to do something, you have to get on. But when we do something, we do get on. Are we missing something? And when we meditate, we can do the experiment to find out what we really are missing, and actually how we can use things without greed, and how we can meditate without greed, and what happens when we just sit down and don't want anything. We give expecting nothing back in return. We give our heart and our mind to this moment. Mind, I give you this moment, and I don't want anything out of it for myself or for anybody. That degree of giving, if you can really do that, not wanting anything, makes you incredibly peaceful. So still, and huge amounts of bliss just flow through the mind. Because you're giving selflessly is something very pure, and the nature of the mind is when you give that much, you get everything back. When you want something, it never comes. So I was practicing that during my retreat as well. Sit down, I give my bottom to this cushion, I give my mind to this moment, nothing else. No watching the breath, no trying to get nimittas and jhanas in these deep states of meditation. Just give myself to this moment. Very effective. It works. When you give that much, wow, you get the whole world. So this is actually where we understand the opposite of greed. When you do give that much, you get some amazing spiritual powers and states. But do you keep them to yourself? No. Because you give expecting nothing back in return, what does come to you? You share with others. You spread it around. That way, even if you do gain things, it's never for you. There's never a sense of ownership. As soon as there's a sense of ownership, it's greed. It's clinging, it's attachment, and the whole edifice falls apart. These things are there for your happiness and peace and contentment. But sometimes we forget what that money is there for, what that bliss is there for. We forget what a home is there for. You have nice houses, you work hard for them. Please enjoy them. Don't spend all day, all month, putting additions and extensions onto your houses. Please don't spend all the time fixing up your garden, putting more flowers, more bird baths, more this and more that. Haven't you got enough of a garden already? It's really strange, you know, that we've got this beautiful forest down at Serpentine, down at Kitchigana, and people come there and plant trees. So we've got enough trees already, thank you. You've got more than enough. Do you want some? We've got some nice big jarrah trees over there. Get a few friends. You can carry it home. You can have it. The point is that sometimes, why do people do that? Can't we leave things alone? I'm always amazed. As a young man, sometimes you went touring around and I remember actually as a young kid, like with my family, went to North Wales, a very beautiful part of the world. We went out Mount Snowdon. I was really disappointed. At the top of Mount Snowdon, there was a restaurant. Why on earth does our culture want to put a restaurant on the top of a mountain? Can't we leave it alone and keep it simple? If you don't put a restaurant up there, you know, we put a flag. Why do they want to put a flag on there, you know, so that, you know, I've been there? Can't we leave it alone? Too often in our world, that's what we do, because we want to own our achievements, we want to own our wealth, we want to own our partner, we want to own everything. Can't we just visit, enjoy, and then leave? And be free? It's wonderful, we climb that high, we give it all that time and energy. Wow, what a wonderful journey. And then we leave that at the top of the mountain and go empty-handed back down, carrying nothing with us at all. No material possessions, no spiritual possessions. Isn't that freedom? Greed is not just for material things. Greed is also for spiritual things as well. I remember years ago, it's probably okay to say this, it was for the old Theosophical Society. Remember the Theosophical Society? Some of you may have still go there. I think it's still there over next to Hyde Park. I went in there because they had a great bookshop and I was looking for some Buddhist books. And I overheard the librarian and a couple of her friends having this conversation. It was just so ridiculous. They were discussing who was an arahat, who was fully enlightened, who was on the path, and who was doing this and who was doing that. It was just more like a one-upmanship. That's what it was. You know, about who was better than somebody else. That's nothing to do with a lack of greed. The lack of greed is that you try and become, the more selfless you are, the more you can just disappear. That's a sign you're getting further on the path. The best enlightened ones, the ones you don't know about. The ones who look like ordinary people. I was told this, but I don't know because they don't watch movies, that in Star Wars, that Yoda, who's supposed to be very enlightened, that no one knew who he was because he was just like an ordinary, wasn't a human being, what was he? A ordinary goblin or something, I don't know what he was. But that was like a sign of his enlightenment. He never went around with a big sort of cap on, you know, like with five stars. I'm a five-star enlightened Yoda, whatever he was. I said, Jedi Knight, that's what he was, wasn't he? Okay, thank you. A master, okay. For the real masters, you don't really know. But you know them by their signs. Like an Ajahn Chah who accumulates nothing. Who can give, expecting nothing back in return. Who's got absolutely no greed at all. If it doesn't work, you don't even own your mistakes. Do you own your mistakes? Those things which went wrong in your life, if you own mistakes, it's called guilt. Why can't we let those ones go as well? Just like when we climb the mountain, we don't need to put a flag there to record that we've made it. We go up there, enjoy the moment, and go down empty-handed. Can't we also do that with our mistakes when we plummet the depths and make big mistakes in our life? Can't we also leave those mistakes down in those depths and climb out, leaving nothing, not carrying anything back? Can't we leave life alone? Forgive our mistakes as soon as we made them, learn, but without any residue? Why do we have to own everything which went wrong? Sometimes it's just amazing. I ask a person if they had a good day, and all they talk about is what went wrong that day. I said, all those things which went wrong, how many minutes did those wrong things occupy? You know, when somebody sort of said something wrong to you, or you made a big mistake, and maybe when they count up all their mistakes and the time that took, it may be 2 or 3 minutes at most of mistakes that day. Maybe if they've had a very, very bad day, 10 minutes of mistakes when you add them all up. So I said, look, it's 24 hours in a day. That's 23 hours and 50 minutes when you made no mistakes at all. If you've been really bad, at least when you were sleeping, you weren't making any mistakes. 8 hours, I suppose, unless they sleepwalked. I don't know what you can do when you sleep. But anyway, most of the time during the day, you actually are beautiful people, perfect people, say kind things, do great things, do your jobs, keep the rules of the road, whatever else you do, you're kind, gentle, good, beautiful, peaceful people. Every now and again you make a mistake. Why is it that we own the mistakes and we don't own all the good stuff we do? Crazy. If you're going to own anything, own the beautiful stuff of your life. Somebody asked me once, Ajahn Brahm, you said you should always let go of the past. Can't we learn from our mistakes? And I said, no. You don't learn from your mistakes. you get depressed from your mistakes. Isn't that true? You don't learn from your mistakes. You learn from your successes. Try that. Every time in the past you've made a mistake, you remember that. Own that. Own all the wonderful things you've done. You know what happens? You don't get depressed, you get encouraged, you get inspired, and you tend to repeat those successes again and again and again. Just like this afternoon, this morning, in Curtin University, those John Curtin medals. I told a few of the people afterwards, and this was honest. My feeling after hearing those wonderful things those two people were doing was to get back here as soon as possible and work my butt off for somebody else. I just wanted to do something, because I was inspired. I wanted to help, to serve, to work harder for whoever, I don't care who. That's what happens with inspiration. That's what happens when you own your good things in the past. You get so inspired and encouraged, you want to do more good. You don't learn from your past mistakes. You learn from your past successes. So let go of the past mistakes, but keep the successes. And then somebody said to me, if you do that, Ajahn Brahm, you always remember the wonderful things you've done, you get a big head. And I said, no. If you focus on the wonderful things you've done in the past, you don't get a big head, you get a big heart. The difference. You get a big heart when you remember your past successes. But even better than that is you don't remember anything at all. Let everything go. Past, good stuff, bad stuff. Just leave it all alone. It's in the past so you can be absolutely free in this moment. To be someone who's free doesn't carry anything at all. The opposite of greed. You don't remember what you've done in the past. It's almost like a spiritual Alzheimer's disease, I suppose. But... because every moment was mindful, you got this beautiful energy, because you don't carry anything around, you're free to act fully in this moment. Why is it we can't love each other in this moment, like the time we first met? Why can't every moment be the time we first meet our friends? Why do we carry all this baggage from the past? Isn't it wonderful to actually look upon a person, as if you know them for the first time? Just see them and be with them, a human being, a person, a mind, something which is amazing and unfathomable, which cannot be judged and should not be judged and shouldn't be put in the box of being a friend or a foe or kind or whatever. This is putting people in boxes. And I'd be judged in the past, and sometimes people could judge me and say, you've got it all wrong, I'm not that wise. People think, oh, you're really compassionate, Ajahn Brahm. No, I'm not. People don't know who I am. I don't know who I am, let alone you guys. How can anybody be judged? How can you put yourself in a box? Depends on what's happening. Sometimes you're lazy, sometimes you're energetic, like anybody else, just responding to the conditions of life. So when you don't judge yourself, you're not carrying anything. You're not greedy for being somebody. You can let everything go and disappear. You're at peace when you have few possessions. So who do you think you are? What is your history? Is that going to limit you and put you in a prison, a box of what you've done? In Buddhism, we always have from the very beginning forgiveness, absolute forgiveness, 100% forgiveness, no matter what you've ever done. No matter what you've ever done to me, I'll always forgive you. Isn't it beautiful when that can happen? It doesn't matter what your wife or your husband has done. They may have been out sleeping with all your best friends. Say, I forgive you. If it comes from the heart, that's powerful. If it comes from the heart, the other one will just sob. Something about forgiveness which is incredible. It's something which is spiritual, which all religions, all paths, everybody, even kids, who haven't got any idea of what religion is and can't even spell the word, they can recognize that this forgiveness is something holy and beautiful and inspiring, something we really need in this world, more and more and more. There's just too much criticism, too much fault finding, too much arguments, too much fighting, too much war. Can we forgive? We're not supposed to have newspapers in our monastery, but someone bought a newspaper, I think yesterday. I just briefly looked through it. Apparently there was another bombing in Bali a few days ago. It'd be wonderful if our Prime Minister got up and said, I forgive you. No anger. Whatever you've done, never mind. Don't know why you did that, but we'll forgive. Wouldn't that be powerful? Wouldn't it move people in another direction? We'll probably have the whole of Indonesia just sort of carrying placards of John Howard and calling him the next imam or whatever. I don't know if it's something holy about forgiveness when someone's really been hurt and someone comes up and says, I forgive you. I read this. I should have kept some of these things which I read. This was from South Africa and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, started by, I think, Desmond Tutu, the Nobel Prize winner. After the terrible years of apartheid in South Africa, when terrible crimes were done by everybody, instead of trying to punish people for the terrible things which were done, in this Truth and Reconciliation Commission, they would give amnesty to anybody who would actually come and fess up to what they'd done. Actually to say exactly what happened in the police stations, in the torture chambers, in the back streets of Soweto, wherever. In this particular case, I remember, was of one of the members of the security forces, an Afrikaner, was telling how he tortured to death one of the black militants of the ANC, the African National Congress. I remember reading the story. Please forgive me, but part of the story, we got the man's penis and nailed it to the bench. That's the sort of gross stuff which went on. His wife was present listening to his confession of how he tortured her husband to death just for fighting for freedom. The man was shaking, as you would do. The widow, went over to him. He shook even more in terror. For this terror turned to tears, and the wife gave him a big hug. I forgive you. She meant it. The courtroom went as quiet as it is in here now. There was something holy there. Someone who had no reason to forgive. A person who had done a terrible crime. The one she loved, her husband, her partner, the father of her children. I forgive you. No wonder the transition from apartheid to the democratic rule went so smoothly in that land. It was an example to what can happen in other conflicts. Honesty, forgiveness. Not carrying anything from the past. This is what we mean by the opposite of greed. You may have thought I was going to talk about greed, not having big houses and big cars and lots of money. No, that's not what I want to talk about. I'm talking about the inner greed, the spiritual greed. The greed for the past, the greed for being somebody, the greed for owning the terrible things which happened to you. The greed for revenge. That's the greed which I think is the worst part of our societies in this modern world. Where we can forgive, where we can share, where we can open up to each other. Where you can actually look upon your partner and forgive them. If that guy had actually tortured to death somebody and their wife could forgive them, can't you forgive your partner for what they've done? They haven't tortured you to death yet. Not yet. Can't we say sorry? It's beautiful when you can say sorry, but we build bridges, we stop animosity, and we give freedom. It's a terrible thing to carry around hatred for another person or for another group or for another race. To carry that around with you. It's just like those people I see, you see in the airports carrying these huge amounts of baggage, lugging them, you know, to the counter and putting them on that weighing machine, just hoping that it's, you know, under the weight. And then have to lug them through the, you know, through the customs. Oh, I just felt so much, you know, sympathy for such people with such heavy luggage. And you know that when you go overseas, you don't use half that stuff anyway. It's just in case, that's all. And it stays in the case. That's what I mean, it's just in case. You can see my sense of humour has not improved after 2.5 months of meditation. But whatever, that's just like people carrying the burdens of their past, what this person did or what that person did, and oh, it's just such a waste of a beautiful mind. You could be free. When you're not burdened by the past and carrying that around, you don't own it, you can let it go, you're not greedy for anything, you're free. It's ready, it's free to meet a Palestinian and fall in love with them and get married and have a wonderful time together. The Catholic and the Protestant in Northern Ireland can go and have a nice drink in a pub together. The Muslim and the Buddhist in the south of Thailand could actually go and just have a beautiful afternoon playing golf. Why can't we do that? We can if we stop owning our past, owning our culture, owning our race, owning our religion. Please don't be a Buddhist who owns their religion and feels embarrassed when other people criticize you. I'm thinking, Buddhist is the best religion in the whole world. We're going to sort of convert all of Perth to being Buddhist. You know, this place used to be a Christian church before. This is only the start. We're still going to move in the cathedrals in Perth. We're going to get our fund together and buy them. I've already been to St. George's Cathedral once. That was only the first time. The second time, convert a few more people. When I converted the new Archbishop, then we're set. That's not what this is all about. This is what it's all about. It's being free. There's something which is more important than Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, or whatever. It's something like this truth, this freedom, this peace, this love, this kindness. We don't own anything in the world, not even your label as being gay, being straight, being Sri Lankan, or being Thai, or being Australian. I don't know who I am. I was born in England. 9 years I spent in Thailand. Been here in Australia now. Spent some time in Sri Lanka. Actually, I've never been to Burma. I'd love to go there one day. I don't know who I am. I've spent a lot of time in Singapore now. Sometimes people say I'm like a Singaporean. Oh, yo. Anyone know Singapore? Oh, my goodness, that means. But the point is, and this is... It's a lovely thing about my lifestyle. Every time I go to Singapore and I land at Changi, there's my friends on the other side. You know that big glass screen? And you can actually see them waiting for you, and there's my friends, they're waiting for me. Welcome home, they say, Ajahn. Every time I go to KLIA, Kuala Lumpur Airport, there's all my friends outside. Hello, Ajahn. It's like going home. Every time I go to Thailand, I'm going to go to Thailand next month. I haven't been there for 2 or 3 years. As soon as I see those pagodas, I'm home. I've got all these lovely friends there. And after Thailand, I'm going to see my mother for her 77th birthday. You know what I recognise about London? Not the pagodas, the pubs. I know, it's something which stands out. The only thing they have in England which is really strange and unique is the pubs. I don't go in them, but I can look outside. Not owning my past, all those things I did in there. I hope none of my friends ever come to Perth and tell you what I did. Anyhow, that's another story. But whenever you go there, you feel you're going home again. This is that little story I said before. Every place where I have a friend is a home. Isn't it wonderful to have friends in all races, all religions? During the rains retreat, actually, one place I went to was actually to Eunorcia, We had these two abbots meeting, Abbot Placid and Ajahn Brahm. And we had Canon Frank Sheehan from Christchurch. He was a referee. He was a moderator, the MC. And he was trying his hardest to get us to argue. You know, because it's fun to hear an argument, and it livens people up, but he just couldn't do it. And there it was, a Buddhist, an Anglican, and a Catholic, getting on together like the closest of friends. I really enjoy that. So these days, every time I go to New Norcia, they're my friends. It's like going home. You know all those monks now, most of them. Isn't it beautiful when you don't own things? So you can be free to be a friend wherever you go. I don't own any race or nationality. You don't own your gender, monk or nun or male or female. You don't own anything. You're not greedy for anything. You don't hold on to anything. You don't attach. You don't own. You can. When I'm in Singapore, I try and be a Singaporean. When I'm in Australia, I try to be Australian. When I'm English, I'll have to polish up my accent a bit. Whatever it is, you just allow yourself to be. And then when you don't own anything, you are completely free, at ease. No burdens. Someone who flows through life like a bird flying through the trees. One of my other similes, actually the simile of the Buddha, not mine. He said, and I've seen this, you can check it out for yourself, I never once seen any bird with a backpack on. When they fly freely. Can't you do the same? I don't mean not taking any luggage when you go overseas. What I'm saying is not carrying the past, not carrying the future, not carrying anything in this world, not clinging to your possessions. If somebody wants something, fine, here you are, take it. If you want my bag, it's yours. I always get another one. Those are beautiful stories. There's a boy in Perth some years ago. He's in the front page of the West Australian because the day before he was cycling on his new BMX bike when he saw a couple of other kids. They'd caught a rabbit and they were torturing it. And he went up to these two boys and said, "Stop, don't do that." And these two boys, bigger than him, no way, you know, get lost. So he said, "If you give me that rabbit, I'll give you my new bike." It was a new bike. It was only in a rabbit. So these two scallywag kids gave this rabbit to the boy, and the boy gave him this BMX bike. I think he took the rabbit to a refuge somewhere. And when he got home, "Well, where have you been? Where's your bike?" When he told him the story, his father was so impressed, he rang up the newspaper. It was in the front page. About, you know, a little boy, I think he was only about 9 years of age or 10 years of age or something. He gave away his bike to help a poor little rabbit who was being tortured. Isn't that wonderful? He was in the front page the next day as well. Three people had offered him new BMX bikes. He made a profit of two. And so it should be. In Thailand, 200 years ago, the abbot of a monastery in Ayutthaya, the capital city of that time, is woken up in the middle of the night. In those days, the most precious possession was the boats, these little canoes, because in those days there weren't any roads. They would get everywhere in Thailand on the rivers and the canals. He heard somebody stealing the monastery boat. So he got up, he checked, and there was a thief soaring through the chain. The monk caught him red-handed. And the abbot said, "What are you doing?" "Taking your boat." "Okay," said the abbot, "don't saw it through. Here's the key." And he unlocked it and gave it to this thief. Just like in Jean Valjean in Les Miserables. Remember that story when he was very poor and about to steal the candlestick and the priest? "If you want it, take it." That's beautiful. So the abbot gave the boat. When the word got around that he'd given this boat to stop a person stealing, He had 3 boats by the next week. People get inspired by that. It's karma, instant karma. That's actually what happens when you're kind and when you give things. You don't own things, you're not greedy. So these are like beautiful stories about the opposite of greed, when we share. What was that last story? Yeah, I told this recently. Because I haven't given a talk here for 2.5 weeks, you've probably forgotten all my stories, which is great. The story of the glass of milk and the 2 cookies? No? Okay, this is not in the book, this is a new story. Because I read this somewhere. It's a nice story to end on about the opposite of greed. I think the story began many years ago when a student, he was a medical student in the United States, and anyone who knows how much fees those colleges and universities charge, especially for med school in the United States, just knows this poor student's predicament. He had to get a job, weekends and vacations, to basically get by, to work his way through college. And so he got this terrible job of selling things door to door. When I was a student, I sold things door to door as well. Encyclopedias, would you believe? And the worst part about it is somebody bought one. And I felt so guilty for years afterwards. Anyhow, he was just saying, I don't know what, knickknacks. And apparently he knocked at one person's door and the lady answered, "No, do you want to buy this?" He said, "No." But the lady looked at him and said, "Are you a student?" "Yeah." "Have you eaten today? Early this morning? You couldn't really afford very much, you've been working hard all day." "Wait," she said, and she brought out a few cookies, biscuits, and a glass of milk. "Thank you very much." Many years later, when he graduated, he was a very successful doctor. He became a top surgeon in cancer treatments. One day he had a patient. He gave this patient extra special attention. She had a very severe cancer, very rare type. He called up all of his friends and colleagues, even from a long way away. And they also helped in the treatment of this woman. And because of his hard effort and skill, she went into remission. She was cured. You know how much those hospitals cost in the United States for such treatment? When she opened the bill, she was trembling. When she read the bill, it said, "Paid with a glass of milk and 2 cookies. He remembered her. He remembered the name and the address. "Paid with a glass of milk and 2 cookies. Hundreds of thousands of medical bills. That's what I call beauty. Something holiness. Not just forgiveness, but something which is giving, not greed. That inspires people. It makes people move in a way which is harmonious, looking after each other, sharing. That's what life is all about. That's what I heard this afternoon at Curtin University, people doing just that. Spending their lives, not owning, but seeing how much they can give. That's what this life is all about. Not what you can get out of it, but how much you can give. Not only does that make my monastery such a beautiful, harmonious place to live, that will make your life together, however many people you've got in your house, the most beautiful house. It's not whose turn it is to wash the dishes. Please, me, 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 me. Can I do it today? Please? Can I take out the rubbish? Please, please, it's me, 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 me. That's what happens in my monastery. Sometimes people fight to do something. They do. When I come back, sometimes they rush to actually take my bag, to take it upstairs. And I says, if they do that, I say, right, you know how to meditate. Because you're not wanting anything, you're giving. Not what I can get, what I can give. It's not being greedy, it's being free. The opposite of greed is that beautiful, inspiring, happy freedom. So just see how much you can give in this life. Give to the person you live with. Don't expect anything back. Don't expect anything from your husband. I'm not going to make a joke. Just see how much you can give. Don't expect anything from your wife. Just give. And you have everything you ever want. Freedom, beauty. beauty, inspiration. You have to do it 100%. 99% doesn't work. 100%. And give your life to this world. Whatever is good, whatever is happy, whatever is beautiful, don't miss an opportunity to make good karma, to make a beautiful world, to serve, to help, to love, to care. Then you be like Ajahn Chah. Someone who's got an empty room, but who's got so much happiness, so much purity, the wealthiest person in the world. That's how you win the lottery of life. The Buddha said, what was it? Contentment is the highest wealth. He understood what? Greed doesn't lead to contentment. These beautiful qualities, that's what leads to wealth. So may you all be wealthy. Thank you. Okay, now has anyone got any questions they'd like to ask? Yeah, go on. Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Materialism. There's nothing wrong with materialism, it's the way it's used. So in other words, if you have some wealth, make use of it. Wealth is a responsibility. It's not a privilege, it's a burden. So you know, if because of your good karma, your hard work, you know, you make some money, then make use of it. Not just for your own personal satisfaction, for material satisfaction. Go and give donations here, open hospitals there. There's two good causes I saw this afternoon. There's St. Bart's for homeless people. There's the place over in Charlie Gardner's with alternative therapies, all given for free. Places like that, or even our meditation center, whatever it is, which is doing something to help other people. You work hard. In your job, in your career. If money comes, it means that somehow the world or nature feels that you are responsible enough. You know what to do with money. You know what to do with wealth. Not just to buy yourself the biggest house in Perth and the fastest car, but so that you can look after other people. Somehow or other, that nature or the law of karma thinks that there's a guy who knows how to share. So we're going to give him a bigger cake to share with others. That's what I think about materialism. We're a wealthy country, Australia. Why can't we share? It's up to you to vote for governments who know about sharing. To select people in power who know how to do that. So the next time a government comes up, I don't care what party it is, they say, yeah, we're going to reduce taxes to make you richer people. You think, is that really what I want? Yeah, go on. Propaganda machinery. You can counter that by coming here every Friday night. You can get reconditioned, re-brainwashed by Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Chattamala, Ajahn Sister Wayama, and all the monks here. Thank you very much. Great. It's actually, I'm serious, sir. Look at what you watch, what you open your mind to. Because sometimes people think, oh yeah, I'm sophisticated enough, I can watch those advertisements and it doesn't affect me. Yes, it does. So, just the same as you watch the food you eat, just watch what your eyes eat. And watch what your ears eat. So, you know, you always have good stuff going into your brain. And you can do that. And that way, give yourself lots of peace in life. Get lots of peace going, and that's called health food for the mind. And then you find that you have a beautiful heart. And the conditioning of the world, you've changed it. Give yourself a moment of peace and you realize how fruitlessly you've scurried about. Learn to be silent. You've known you've talked too much. Be kind and you know your judgment of others was too severe. There's a little poem in the front of my book. I know that by heart because I thought it was beautiful, simple and meaningful. That's what you can recondition yourself. Any other question over there? Yeah, you had one, yeah. 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 Yeah, you can save something if you wish, but the best thing to save is your friends. Because you may have a nice sort of house in your old age, but if you've got no friends, you've got no happiness, and you look back upon your life, what did I do in this life? You know that sometimes I look back what I've done in the last 21 years in Perth. I built a monastery. Oh, just thinking about that brings, you know, literally tears. I've done something. And you just do a small thing and it just brings you so much happiness. You cared for somebody. You made a difference. That is your best superannuation. Good karma. So you can do, you know, save a little bit to pay the, you know, the bills. But that's not the real superannuation which is going to keep you happy and content in your later years. It's all your friends, the relationships you built with others. And your kids. Especially that very rare these days if you've got a partner and you work through that relationship and you make it last 20, 30, 40 years. You've got a happiness which is very rare these days and you deserve it. You've got a partnership, a friend, not just a wife, a friend, a close friend who can hold your hand through those last years. That's our superannuation. It's not with your wife, maybe another lady you meet later on. But learn how to be a friend. That's the best superannuation. That's the only one I've got. Got no money in the bank, no superannuation. But I've got all these friends. I've got no worries at all about my old age. They're beautiful. Okay, so thank you for listening.